goal is to bring you your next favorite band.
Thanks for having us. This is a very cool show.
So through many iterations, and we finally landed on the weirdest one by far.
Just a couple of feelings, and boom, you got a song.
I remember this one time. I had been writing some songs, and I went out. I'm just going right in on this story. I went out, and so I was.
The story's longer than the song itself. We'll go ahead and play it.
And listen, it's going to be everybody's favorite band. Welcome to Your Next Favorite Band. That's both the show title and our promise to you. We here at Stereophilia Studio are tireless in our pursuit of finding incredible, genre-defiant artists who are either a hot, up-and-coming band or a group that has been delivering for years but have flown under the radar. Tonight, we have the frontman and mastermind behind the robed symphonic rock choral collective, Tim DeLauder of Polyphonic Spree. Each month, we will bring you live streams, audio podcasts, and perhaps even a live concert where you can listen to the stories and hear the music of artists personally curated by us based on what we feel will be worthy of your time. Be sure to subscribe and tune in to each episode because the possibilities are endless and you never know who will be
your next favorite band.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. I am your host, Philip Reese.
Hello, and I'm your co-host, David Moore.
And this is...
your next favorite band.
And it's going to be. It's going to be your next favorite collective. I thought that was a perfect way to put this particular guest and band.
I mean, I think it's a sound description. We'll have to get his opinion on that.
And he's having a good time in the green room here listening to us. So we are going to be talking to Tim DeLauder today of the Polyphonic Spree. I am, in particular, highly pumped for this one.
Yeah, when you let me know that this had come together, you were, I'll use the word giddy.
Yes, yeah, quite giddy. It's been such a year for me being able to have a chat with people who I considered heroes of mine back when I was a youth listening to music. And then now they're still generating amazing music under, in some cases, new names and new bands. And it's just really cool to be able to bring that under this banner of your next favorite band.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things about this conversation that'll happen is Tim's and the Polyphonic Spree's music has been more prevalent than you probably realize.
Absolutely.
And that will be part of what I think will be interesting about this.
That is a great way to put that. But before we get into the guest and the introing of the music, first and foremost, super pumped. What am I pumped about? The Winter Wonder Jam is this coming Sunday, December 10th. You've been hearing some of the announcements. We the Tisberries are there. Fig for a Kiss is there. John Worthy, Seven Horse. There's a bunch of other announcements we've already made. There's some more coming. There's some really exciting things happening. And all to help raise some funds for our local homeless shelter and shine a light on the great work that people like them do. And if you have one in your local town, encourage you to consider that as well.
I couldn't have said that better myself. Well, the only thing you left out of that was the time, which is 3 p.m. on Sunday, December 10th. That's Eastern time for anybody that is not in our local time zone.
Correct. And we are going to be able to play some Polyphonic Spree Christmas music at that as well. So we'll talk about that a little bit more later. On the topic of Christmas music, David, if you had to guess, what is the best-selling Christmas album of all time?
Christmas album or Christmas, because I would say it's probably Bing Crosby's White Christmas, but that I think it's probably single is probably how that's being
probably
defined.
Yes. So number one is actually, and I don't think it was going to be a total surprise, the Elvis Christmas album.
Oh, that one doesn't shock me.
Yep. Released, it was October 15th when it was released, 1957. And
so recent.
First holiday album remains the best selling Christmas album of all time. In the United States, I probably could have put that qualifier out there.
Yeah, well, that changed. I mean, there was this other one that I was thinking of because of that.
Right, yes, some other country. But 21 million copies sold, best-selling Christmas album anyway.
Wow.
So we have the Winter Wonder Jam. The Polyphonic Spree, they have an annual show, the Holiday Extravaganza. I'm wearing the shirt today for it in honor of that to help support and promote it. And we'll bring up the dates of that. It's over at the Majestic Theater in Dallas, Texas. But here we have, so Polyphonic Spree, we'll get into more of this, formed in 2000, but they've recently released brand new music last month. So like, we have some amazing stuff to share here. This particular album is really amazing in its storytelling and the messaging it has to share, and of course the music. But it's really one to listen to from beginning to end. It's almost like one song, in my opinion, like with many different movements. We'll get Tim's take on all of this as well. So I struggled to pick one song to play here, and I thought, well, why don't we just go with the first track so that it's almost like the intro to what people can listen to. So here is The Galloping Seas from the Polyphonic Spree.
Tim DeLauder is the frontman of Tripping Daisy, the Polyphonic Spree, and preteen Zenith. With Tripping Daisy, Tim released four albums and received extensive rotation on MTV for the song I Got a Girl. The Polyphonic Spree was formed in 2000 and started as a collaboration between DeLauder and 12 other musicians, with its ranks swelling to almost 30 musicians over time. Their first album, The Beginning Stages Of, was released in 2002 on his own Good Records label. The Spree has had songs placed in Apple and Volkswagen advertising campaigns, the TV series Scrubs, the documentary Murderball, and recorded music for the Showtime series Weeds, and the United States of Tara, for which Tim received an Emmy nomination. The Polyphonic Spree have released eight albums, with their newest album, Salvage Enterprise, which this song is from, released in 2023, making their first release of original music in nearly a decade.
All right, we'll bring this up a little bit, and we'll bring Tim on the show. They'll come around, they'll come around. Hold your head high in the storm. What you lost, it seems you left before. The shyness runs away. Nice. Welcome to the show, Tim DeLauder.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. What an honor. We're going to let that continue to play in the background, if you don't mind, and this is the way you can kind of speak to it. So first track off the new album, Salvage Enterprise. I get a lot of, like, kind of like the Beatles psychedelicness a lot of times throughout this whole album. Is that something that seems to be inspirational on your end?
I'm sure it's nestled with all sorts of inspirations through the years. It's got some Moody Blues in it.
For sure.
It's got Yes in it. It's got some pop sensibilities of the Beatles. It also has Percy Faith, has some elevator music in it, Carpenters. It kind of got a little bit of everything.
Right.
Your mention of Carpenters and Yes both ring a bell for me. Like, I get both of those sides of the 70s from it in that sonic side of it, but also there's an acoustic texture to this that seems to be pretty prevalent on this whole album, not just this song, in a way that's slightly different from things you guys have done in the past.
Yeah, there was a conscious effort to create this thread of this lone acoustic kind of going through, keeping you through the whole record, almost where you find yourself, even the tempo of the songs kind of keep you going like this through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of the songs were written on guitar, and there's this woodsy kind of earnest sensibility with that acoustic being in there that I kind of wanted to be the thread. So that's why you kind of hear it through there.
And it is something that I know, and we're going to get to a specific example of it, but in general, you do hope that people listen to this beginning to end, you know, as one entire art piece rather than one song here or there.
Most definitely. If I had my druthers, there wouldn't have been any separation. It'd have been one track, but
sure,
that would have pissed off a lot of people. So, I want people to hear it as a whole. I mean, that's how I used to listen to records when
right.
I would buy a record. I'd go home, me and a friend, go to the record store, buy the record, couldn't wait to get back to the place.
Yeah.
Turn the lights off, put the record on, and just listen to it front to back without any interruptions. And that was kind of the goal for this record. I kind of want people to just take a moment and have an experience with a record like that, especially one that was designed for them to have that experience.
Yeah. And then you actually, before the record was even released, this summer, I believe, you took it on the road where you went to national parks and whatnot and just set up and invited people to show up and just listen to the music.
Yeah, it was like the only way I could, I figured I could get people to do it was if I held them captive and just kind of like forced them to be able to hear the record.
I have a picture here of, I mean, it's the kind of your, one of your promo photos that you've been using a lot. And it's such a badass photo too. Like, it's just you like saying, yeah, this is my music and you're gonna
love it. Exactly. I mean, you know, and that is a real photograph. I mean, that Milky Way you see in the back, all those stars, I had to stand really still. That was taken by David Wilson, who's our sound guy. And that's in Joshua Tree.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was there to do two nights as the first stop of the listening experiences.
Sure. But
my friend was putting on this kind of miniature art collective Burning Man kind of thing in Joshua Tree and invited me to come out there. And so David's like, man, I'm going to get your picture. And see the purple on the rocks there?
Yep.
You couldn't see that at the time if you were looking at that. But since he had the long exposure, those are the lights from an art installation that's going on down below the installation.
That is so cool.
Down below. Yeah, so you couldn't see that if you were standing there. It just kind of looked like they were a little bit lit up. But since he did the long exposure,
really saturated.
Really brought out and then you got all those stars in the back. So it's just like such a great photograph for something he just like tried to just, here, just stand there. I wanted to see if I can get
it. It's amazing. There was something about it that made it look like it was not Photoshopped, but I didn't want to ask the question in case it was like, nah, we threw that Milky Way in there. But I'm so glad.
No, man, that is completely real.
Legit.
Nothing was done to that. Legit. It was all it was a long exposure.
Right.
And if you zoom in on me, I'm distorted a little bit because I moved my head.
Yeah, but you had to still stay still for probably like a minute or something like that. And
it's
impossibly hard. Yeah, it's impossibly hard to not move like that.
Yeah, especially me because I'm all over the map. I'm like Rodney Dangerfield. I can't get it pulled on my chest and on my shirt and just like constantly.
That's amazing. We didn't. I did not have Rodney Dangerfield reference on my bingo card, but
no, neither did I.
But I did that because he's always pulling at it.
Perfect one.
So from those listening experiences, which I think is a wonderful way to expose people to new music, I'm a big fan of that type of thing. Did anything change from the album once it was exposed like that to the album we got released on the 17th of November?
Yeah, it kind of gave me some time to sit with it, obviously. And I listened to it on a nightly basis doing these things. And there was a sequencing order and then also the beginning of a song that I liked better what we had that I had changed at the last minute when we were mixing. So there were some things after spending a little bit of time with it that I made some subtle changes. Now the fans had this record for they've had this record for almost 12 months before everybody else got it. Because it was for all the people that donated, the backers that donated to the record.
Sure, sure.
We gave them the record as soon as we got it finished. So they all had a link to be able to hear it. So I'm sure when they heard what came out this time, they're like, oh, that's different, or, you know, there's some sequencing differences and then some beginnings and a couple mix changes. But yeah, so, but I think it was really good. I mean, I've never sat on a record that long before putting it out. That was kind of over the top, kind of weird almost, because almost, 15 months sitting with this record without releasing it. That's a really long time. Yeah. And it was because I was completely in my head about it. Like I said, I was intent on people to hear it as a whole. And then it's like, you know, I went off and did those listening experiences, which was a completely spontaneous, random idea that I had that was inspired by when I was sharing the record with some friends out in East Texas. We were out laying up by a bonfire, and I played it through a little Bluetooth speaker, and we listened to it as a whole, and they all just go, shit, man, this, damn. I mean, and it's the first time I ever heard it go, this is the way you need to listen to this record. And I was like, you know what? It just kind of worked in that environment. That's when I thought, you know, maybe what if I just take this thing out and just do these listening experiences? So I rented this big speaker. I had 12 speakers and sound system and two generators. And I rented a Sprinter van and just loaded that shit up and just went out on the road.
Yeah, yeah.
Without any. The only location I knew where I was going was Joshua Tree, because that was planned. And after that, it was all different.
For that photo shoot.
Yeah. That was a bonus.
Yeah. Was there one, I think I remember you posting about it. Was there one where you got in trouble, like you got a fine or a ticket or something?
I was in Santa Cruz, and I just finished setting it up. It was on the beach in Santa Cruz. And literally, I just finished. People were starting to come, getting ready for their experience. And the cops came up and they go, what are you doing? I'm just, you know, playing this record for some friends. It's like a sound bath deal. It's really chill music. It's not that big of a deal. I'll be done in 43 minutes. And they go, do you have a permit? I'm like, no. I thought it'd be okay just because I'm right here and I'm away from everybody. And I just thought it'd be, you know, it's quiet music. And I see people out here with jam boxes. I thought I could do
it. Sure, yeah. Right.
No, you can't. And I said, well, if I do it anyway, are you just going to write me a ticket? And because I'm down with that. And he said, no, we're going to confiscate the stuff.
Oh, my God.
And if you're not cooperating, we'll just arrest you.
Oh, jeez.
And so I go, okay.
We're done here.
Yeah. So I put out on Twitter that I got busted at that. And this church reached out and said that I could come there and do it in their front of their church. And so the next day I went and did it at this cool ass church.
Right. Yeah.
And they let me, and I did it. It was awesome.
That's amazing.
That asking if you have a permit just makes me think of Back to the Future, where Doc Brown is setting up the lightning equipment. So you got a permit for this stuff right here?
Exactly. That's what it was like. It takes me 2.5 hours to set that thing up, and it's like, I'm by myself. And it's just like, come on, guys, work with me. But
right.
They weren't having it. But you know what? That's the only problem I ever had out of, you know, the almost 20 that I've done.
Yeah. How cool, though, that the church came through and was like, yeah, do it here.
Yeah. There you go.
It must be because you wear robes as the Polyphonic Spree.
You know, those robes come in handy.
It's really, depends
on where it gets you are. You,
gets you some church cred.
Yeah.
So the name of the album, Salvage Enterprise. That's the name of your father's business?
It was his business many, many years ago that I worked at as a kid. And my dad, it was an unclaimed freight business in the 70s. It was kind of a new thing. Now they're like, we have big lots and all these kind of big stores that, you know, that do this. But back then, it was just getting started, where damaged goods would happen in trucking and railroad transportations. And maybe, you know, one case got dented on the whole pallet, but so they would damage the whole pallet. Well, it still had, you know, 90% of the pallet was good. So my dad, along with some other guys here in Dallas, thought, well, hey, man, we'll buy this stuff from you because you're just going to trash it.
Sure.
And so these guys bought it, opened a warehouse up, and made it open to the public. So you'd get everything from pharmaceuticals to auto parts to musical equipment to books, wow, to whatever, whatever's going on, whatever's being transported.
Whatever fell off the back of the truck is kind of where it was. Yeah.
Well, not even that. It's like in transportation, they hit a bump and the pallet falls over and it gets damaged in route. It's literally whatever is being transferred on the roads and on the railroads. And so my dad had that business and I worked there as a kid and pretty much ran it as a kid at a really young age. So,
yeah. So that's where the name comes from. And then I heard you mention that this particular album is different vocally than anything you've done before.
Well, what I mean by that is melodically, you know, it's so weird. It's like, you know, I've loved melody and it's kind of what that's my thing is
definitely
melody. Mm-hmm. And, you know, before this record was made, you know, I didn't even know if I could write another song. I'd kind of been in a bad place for quite some time. And so, you know, I write songs out of improvising. So I write the melody, the lyrics and the music at the same time when I go to write something. Mm-hmm. And so nothing was happening for the longest time. And so I thought I was done. And, you know, I stumbled on this record and the songs of this through trying to teach myself Logic, which is the recording software, Apple recording software. And which I've always had people around me that would record me. And this was during COVID. And I thought, you know what, I'm just going to learn how to do this. I'm going to buy this and I'm going to teach myself and I'm going to go there. So in order to learn it, I had to record things. And so while I'm recording some, I pick up the guitar and it just starts coming. I was by myself. No one was around. I've been in this place for a while and these songs just started to kind of come out. And I happened to be recording it and it was in the state of mind that I was in. Mm-hmm. And it was almost like documenting myself where I'm at. And before I knew it, the record is documenting me where I'm at and me coming out of that.
Working through it. Yeah.
Working through it. And, but it's all caught on tape, which is pretty awesome to be able to do something like that.
Yeah. So, thank goodness you had the hit record. I mean,
exactly. And I've done stuff like that before, you know. Tripping Daisy had a record called Tops Off Her Head, which we just hit record and wrote 40 minutes of songs and this body of music. That's how we did it. You know,
you did it in concerts, even like where you were just like, you would make up a song in the moment.
Yeah. It's kind of like I've always done it. And I was with musicians. The guys could improvise as well.
Yeah.
And so we got to the point where we could just really kind of telepathically, like, know where we're going and it was great. And, but anyway, in the process of writing this record, I discovered some new melodies for myself that I had never really kind of ventured into before, in a way of singing that was more vulnerable and I don't know, more where I was. So
it might have been what you needed was to allow it to come through the music.
It was exactly what I needed. And that's what's so amazing is that, you know, you get down and we all deal with depression and things and life can be overwhelming. And we sometimes forget that, you know, you think, I'm ever going to get out of this. You know, it had been years since I'd written a song and I thought I was basically done.
Mm-hmm. And it was 10 years between the last Poly Spree album and this one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say I was all that. I have a family. So a lot of it is with, you know, being with my kids.
Of course.
And being a dad and just being present. At the same time, I'm going through this. And so it was just not happening. But when it does come and you realize that you're kind of doing it yourself because you're having these reactions of writing a song and it's inspiring you to go further. Mm-hmm. And you're just basically, it's promoting the next move. You're realizing you're doing it yourself. You're bringing yourself out of it. And that's kind of a really it's an exciting feeling to know that you're capable of doing that.
Right.
Absolutely.
And this record is, it celebrates the aspect of what we're capable of. I mean, humans want to be happy at the end of the day. We need that and we want to get there. And it's just, sometimes it's tough, but man, if you can just get centered and find it, and I don't know how to tell you to do that because it took me a while, but I just know that we're capable of it. And this record celebrates that aspect.
That's so amazing. Yeah. We're actually doing an event in February, a mixture of live performers and interviews and such that's dedicated to mental health. And it's going to be to just simply whatever, like have people know that it's a safe space that, you know, remove stigma, hopefully, you know, in whatever way possible. And probably the most important part is if anybody doesn't feel as alone because they hear other people going through and struggling and managing the same thing.
Yeah.
Then that's going to be, you know, time well spent. So that's something we're going to be doing in February. And
that's good.
I'll be sure to kind of like highlight, we're trying to find music to kind of use as like, you know, again, inspiration or elements to, hey, you know, listen to this story or this song or whatever. And the music lyrically and whatnot is about that kind of journey of coming through and getting to the,
It's exactly that. And it wasn't planned that way. And it's so, it's raw, it's honest, and it's, I just can't believe it happened. It's one of those records, like you just, you know, I've been doing this for a long time and you hope that you can get something like this and it happened. I'm thankful.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you for sharing all of that. That's wonderful. We'll come back to Polyphonic Spree, but I did want to kind of, a lot of times on the show, what we do is we go back to the beginnings and kind of come back to it all chronologically so that we can even share some of the previous Polyphonic Spree stuff as well. You're from Dallas originally, still there. And that's where you grew up.
Yeah.
And something I understand is that some of the first like music inspirations and storytelling inspirations you got was listening to the Disney storybook records and just how that could tell a story through sound and music.
Correct.
Yeah.
That was kind of, I realized that at, you know, at a young age, like every time my parents divorced when I was young. So I was, it was just me and my mom, living in an apartment. And when I'd get sick, she'd have to go to work and I'm at home. So we'd go to the drugstore and buy a record. They would sell records at the drugstore. And, I'd buy a, you know, whatever Walt Disney storybook record was happening at that time.
I actually found them because I was so curious when I heard that you shared this. I'm like, I think I listened to those too. And you had mentioned Brer Rabbit. So here's that one.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, let me show you something.
Yeah.
You see the Disneyland logo at the top?
Yep.
Okay, so we used to be on Hollywood Records, which is Disney, all right?
Yeah.
And that was for Together We're Heavy. And the A&R there was Jeffrey Weiss. He was a great guy, killer, a music collector. It turned me on to a lot of great music. Anyway, I said, man, I want my record to have that Disneyland record label for the logo. And he said, all right, no problem. So he just called the guys and told them, well, they make these records and they pull it out. And then David Agnew calls, who was like he's the attorney and he was like the head of the business side of Disney. And it's like, what the fuck are you doing? You can't use that. It's like, these are printed. He goes, those are specifically for those records. You can't just put it on whatever you want. And so they stopped manufacturing that record. But that record with those logos are like pretty sought after. They're really valuable records because
that's
of
fantastic.
That freaking logo on there. But
I knew when
Jeffrey was so wheels off. He just made a phone call. Yeah, we just want to use this logo, put this on there, and he called down. And those guys aren't thinking about
it. Yeah, they're just like bang.
Yeah, well, okay, there. Whatever. Yeah. But they put a halt to that.
Yeah. I was waiting for the call from legal. Yeah, that was waiting for legal to show up on that one.
When I was looking them up, I remembered this, like, you know, see the pictures, hear the music, read the story. Like, it was like, a lot of them had that like wording at the bottom.
Yeah.
Your story just brought me right back to me doing those too. And you're so right. The way it would be like this brilliant way of, you could listen to someone walk, you know, or an animal, like, you know, whatever. It would just do all this great storytelling through music.
Yeah, they didn't have anything visual for you at that time. And then eventually they came out with those little TV things with slides, and you put the slide in and play the record.
Yes,
and then you'd see it on the screen. So they had a colorful booklet in there, and then they'd have, you'd read the booklet, follow the pictures, but listen to the music to be able to tell the story.
Sure.
And so I just love that aspect. And it kind of, I think at a young age, it kind of, that's what I thought, this is what you could do with instruments, symphonic instruments. And it's so weird. It's like my taste for the spree is all from when I was a kid, little guy, you know, second grade influences of my time in music at that time is it's all from that era.
Before you get to the spree, there's this phase where it's Tripping Daisy, and I'm going to do my best to make this shorter because I've learned my lesson. Do you remember the band in the 90s, Dada? They had that song Disneyland that was a pretty big hit.
Yeah, yeah.
So they had fairly decent success, ended up, you know, ending that sound, and then they reborn out a name called Seven Horse. So they have music out now under the name Seven Horse. It's a totally different sound. Kind of similar to the journey you've done, but we had them on, and I was so, again, giddy to go talk to the people from Dada that we spent, I screwed it up. I ended up talking the whole time about Dada, and they're like, can we please promote the current music?
Right.
So I asked them, first I asked for forgiveness, and then I said, would you come back and do a part two? So we're not, if anything, look, we're going to focus on the spree here and just tell the story of Tripping Daisy as it kind of tells your overall story arc. But I'll cross my fingers and maybe we can come back and do a whole separate episode on Tripping Daisy. But today,
go for it. What would you like to know?
Yeah, yeah. So 1990, you formed Tripping Daisy after meeting Wes Bergen.
Bergen.
And he is this, you know, killer guitarist, you know, overall kind of Renaissance guy. Apparently your wife introduced the two of you because you were looking to form a band.
Yeah. I was like just playing with all sorts of different musicians in Dallas, trying to find a band, people that I could click with. And Julie went to school, acting school with Wes. And she goes, I know this guy plays guitar. He seems like a really great guy. You should meet him. And we met and we just completely hit it off within like 10 minutes. And he would play and I would just kind of start singing and he knew where I was going and I knew where he was going. And it was like, okay, this is awesome. We just weird like how it happens like that, because I had played with so many different musicians trying to find people at that time, and it's just I knew within 10 minutes with Wes it was just magic.
This is a fit, right?
Yeah, that's awesome. It is, it's such a wonderful sound. I was sharing with you before we went live, it's the exact years of college and all of my college buddies and I. It was always about first Bill, then I Am an Elastic Firecracker, and it was on our, you know, 5-disc CD changer regularly. In fact, the way we even discovered you is myself and another one of our college friends. We were on the college radio station, and we his name was Joey. He and I came up with this, you know, basically we'd play three songs from a new band. And people would call in and vote for one they thought, and it would be, you know, like the song of the week, and we would add it to the rotation. And then that was a way that it got in. And the very first one we ever did, so like my freshman year of college, was the very first winner was My Umbrella by Tripping Daisy. So that has always
been my decision, your decision. There's no common ground. I'm sick and tired myself.
Yep, exactly. So I have it here to play a little bit so that people can really hear this kind of difference between that at very, that's like your first single under Tripping Daisy, and to where, you know, Polyphonic Spree goes. So just real quick, here's My Umbrella by Tripping Daisy. You're going to basically hear exactly what Tim just did right there.
My decision, your decision. There's no common ground. I'm sick and tired myself.
And a very, you know, 90s video kind of feel going on for those people listening to the podcast. But this song is just kind of was just so anthemic for us, and you know, the whole album. I mean, we love Brown Eyed Pickle Boy, and we loved, you know, all of the different tracks on there, and then, you know, it turns into the I Am Elastic Firecracker as well.
What a trip. Those were crazy times, man.
Yeah. You play this song as the Spree sometimes.
Yeah, I'll bust it out
every
now and then for some of those Tripping Daisy fans are out there. It's so weird. It's like I completely alienated Tripping Daisy fans when I started the Spree. I never told anybody that I used to be in a band, Tripping Daisy. I kind of really kept it almost like...
Start from scratch.
Yeah, secret. Yeah. I didn't say any, because I didn't want Plyphonic Spree to have its own light and not be associated with anything, and just have its own fair shot.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like I lost a lot of Tripping Daisy fans at that. And, you know, a lot of them weren't very Spree fans. I think some of them came around, but if you're a hardcore Tripping Daisy fan, you know, there's far and few between that are like Spree fans, although I do think that they're coming around.
No, I'm one of them. But when Spree first came out, I struggled. Because I was looking for a Tripping Daisy sound. Once I let that go and realized it's basically almost like I had to start from scratch and just listen to it as if it wasn't an evolution. It was just purely its own thing. Yeah. That's when it hit for me, and it was great. So, like, I'm with you on that one. It was kind of interesting that that I heard you talk about that, because I always felt bad. I'm like, but I love this music so much. I want to like that one. But I had to stop viewing it as like 2.0 version of Tim DeLauder. It was not that.
Yeah, it wasn't. It was completely different. It was also something that, you know, when I would think about the Spree when I was in Tripping Daisy, I knew I was going to do the Spree, but I always thought it was going to be like when I'm this age
right
now. Like, I didn't think I was going to be doing it, you know, back then. And so the way that I thought about the Spree, it wasn't anywhere remotely close to in the world of Tripping Daisy at that time. To me, it seemed more mature, like later on in life I would be doing this. And I wasn't even going to be in the band. I was just going to kind of put the band together, and I wanted to hear the sound of that. And so it's just happened a lot sooner. So when you think about where Tripping Daisy left off with the self-titled and Jesus Hits Like the Atom Bomb, and then you go to, you know, you could hear things, elements of the Spree popping out, you know,
Definitely.
Drive to the Sun,
mm-hmm.
Kids Are Calling. You can hear things there. They're common themes there that are shared with the Spree.
For sure.
But it was a more, I don't know, it's organic and not as electric, more folky and more spiritual in a sense.
Sure.
But,
based on my ears and then having, you know, researched, you know, either listened to other interviews or read them or whatever, I get the sense that when you were starting to write for the Spree, you let go of anything that would hold you back, like as far as, oh, here's how a song is written or here's the structure or whatever. Like, so those little windows into it were probably just peaks. And then once you finally let go of all that structure, that's where the Spree finally starts to take off.
Yeah, it was pretty, you know, my whole songwriting, it changed. It was weird. I kind of wrote the same way, but I didn't. I was open and willing to go to kind of new places songwriting wise. And it's just, you know, like I was telling you, they're all written out of improvising. And so it's kind of where it just kind of happened.
Yep.
It's weird. There's a lot of parallels to the very beginning, pun intended, beginning stages of this record.
Sure.
It's weird. They're almost like bookends at this point. If the Spree were to end at right now, I think, oh, that makes sense to me. I've got beginning stages and this one. It pretty much ties it all together.
Sure, sure, sure.
Not that that's going to happen, but if it did, I find a lot of my headspace with beginning stages it's kind of reminiscent to where I'm at on this record.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that kind of alone songwriting kind of, I don't know, explored. And yeah, it's just, it was different than Tripping Daisy.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And I'm going to, just to tie a bow on Tripping Daisy, I'm being a good boy here, David. I have so many notes that I'm just skipping past.
Ah, go for it.
No, well, no, I want to stay on time here for you also, but.
Don't worry about me. Let's go. If I'm having fun, I'll let you know.
all right. So I'll sprinkle in a few here. So let's start with this. First, let me do this just to earn like the credibility. So just today, Spotify Wrapped came out. And one of my housemates from college, his name is Russ, he sent us his Spotify Wrapped. And in the year 2023, his number one song for the year was Prick by Tripping Daisy.
Oh, my God.
So of all the songs that he listened to all year, this is the one he listened to the most.
Interesting.
This year. This year. Right. Wow. So
that's an epic song, too.
Oh, my gosh.
One of the best leads, I think, ever in rock and roll.
Yeah, so that's Wes. And from what I understand, not only is that the great, like, this, for anybody, it's a 9-minute song, so I could never play it here. But the solo, the guitar solo in that song is mind blowing.
Yeah.
And I heard that he did, it was one take. It was the first
one. It was one take. And I'm like, he's like playing, and my head's right. Like, I'm looking at his fingers. I'm sitting on the floor. I was like messing with his effects and just fucking with him. And he just, I couldn't believe it. Yep. And it's like when he finished it, I just stood up and I looked at Ted Nicely. He was on the glass. He was got producing it with us, and Andy Baker engineering. And I was just like, oh, yep. God.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want to like talk about spiritual, you want like a spiritual experience, go put that song on, because it starts out mellow and it's this 9-minute build through that guitar solo and this explosion of catharsis that is just like, it's hard to compare that song to anything else, let alone anything else on that album.
Yeah, it's a pretty epic song.
It really is.
But that lead, man, is, and I know it's like talking about a guitar lead, you don't understand. It was just one of those ones that I just couldn't believe he did that. That's how he was, you know. He was extremely talented.
Yep.
And we tapped in just a portion of what Wes was capable of. You know, he had perfect pitch. He played classically trained pianist. The guy could play Chopin but no one ever knew that about the guy.
My goodness.
He's into quantum physics. He would go to, you know, he would take these quantum physics classes just to do it for fun.
Mm-hmm.
He was just an exceptional human being. Just exceptional. Had just a light around him that was amazing. And I think about him every day still. Mm-hmm.
And that speaks to, so for those who don't know, Wes passes away basically right before the self-titled Tripping Daisy album comes out.
Yeah. We didn't, I mean, his dad had to finish the record.
I was going to ask you to talk about that. Yeah.
We were in the making the record and.
Yeah. He's on Soothing Jubilee. Is that right?
Yeah.
And this is 99, right? Just for a little time scale for everyone.
Yeah. And we asked Wes's dad to play because Wes's dad was a musician. He was in a band called Sweetgrass back in the 70s. And that's where Wes got his musical talent. And we asked his dad, Don Berggren, to play it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really special, you know, nugget of information. That's very, very cool. Really cool. But here you are at that moment. You're a new father. You have another one. You're expecting a second.
Yeah.
And now you are also saying, I can't continue this band without this partner you had in writing and creation. So like, that's it has to be a very scary moment for you.
It was, well, I was devastated, more so than anything. We all were, like I said, it's like, and I know people say this about people that leave early, but and there's something, he was 27 years old, and there's something to that. I believe these people are special. I know Wes was. He was a remarkable human being. And when he departed, it was just devastating, man. I couldn't even think about even playing Tripping Daisy again without him. That's the last thing on my mind, to be honest with you.
Right. You were probably even worried you would even play anything again.
Yeah. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was kind of numb by it all. Like I said, I had my daughter Stella. She was born in 98. So I had, Stella around, which was pretty amazing. And Oscar was about to come out.
Mm-hmm.
I had those things in my life, my kids, which was huge. It saved me. And us, my wife, Julie, and Tudy included. It was rough. yeah, the last thing in my mind was find someone else to come do Wes's parts. It was like,
no,
there's nobody else like him. This is it. I'm done. Yeah. And they wanted, the band wanted to keep going. And I couldn't get there. I wasn't, didn't feel it.
Right.
And then I just decided I'm just going to take a break and didn't really do anything. I started working. And,
Yeah. And then I guess, was it Chris Penn? Like, was he the one that then kind of forced you to perform?
Yeah, it was Chris and Julie. Chris, I just kind of took, we went out and followed Granddaddy, went on a road trip and hung out with those guys. We were friends with them and went to their shows in Beachwood Sparks and hung out with those guys and just kind of like bounced from show to show, just kicking it, not really thinking about doing anything musically. But I was writing some songs that I was doing on a little four track and just nothing I thought was going to do anything with, but I just, my way of like, I'm still writing. So that's cool.
Right.
And then Chris said, you know, hey man, Granddaddy's playing this show. You should open up for him. And it's Bright Eyes and Granddaddy.
And it was 2 weeks, right? It was like,
yeah, he
said, you got 2 weeks to,
got 2 weeks to get this going. And so, we put the band together, Polyphonic Spree, in 2 weeks, a band of people that I've never even known in my life.
That's amazing.
Or working with the instruments that I'd never worked with for in my life before. Yeah. And, but we did it. I used family members and friends. And then, like I said, a lot of people I didn't know.
Yeah.
There's like 28 of us and it was, insane.
Yeah. 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 And at that same point, you're also, you opened Good Records, right? You opened the record shop.
Opened up Good Records the same year.
Yeah.
Kind of at the same time. So, which I'm actually sitting above Good Records right now.
How cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which of course at that time records were waning. Like you had the CDs were starting to go away. Streaming services were coming in.
Yeah.
So the only thing, you know, potentially more dangerous than putting 28 members on a traveling band is opening
a record store. Yeah. They were all
both.
They were all going out of business. I'm starting a band with five bands in it. You know, it's one. It's like, it was, you know, all my family and friends were like, man, this is a really cool idea, man. But what are you doing? I mean, you need to get back with a smaller band and, you know, get back out there. And I'm like, this is it. This is what I want to do.
You were
do.
Like a traveling, your own festival, which is kind of the feel of those things. Yeah.
You know, and like our own party, you know, when the Polyphonic Spree's out and we go to, you know, there's an after party. It's like, we show up, it's like, there's the party. It's crazy, man.
Yeah. 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 So
the band hits fire code when it shows up, like, sorry, nobody else is allowed in.
Yeah, no kidding.
We have a small little listening room here in Bethlehem. If you were booked, you would probably fill half the place.
Yeah, that's us. Now we invited one of you guys. We didn't know all of you. Hey man, it's a package deal.
Yes, you get all or nothing.
You get all or nothing.
Yeah. And then, so this was, I thought this was super interesting. So you get an opportunity to potentially, use your music in an ad, but you're working with this whisper in the back of your voice that Kurt Cobain made people feel like you were a sellout if you gave your music over to commercials.
Yeah.
And you even passed something up, I guess, with M&M's, with the Tripping Daisy music.
Yeah.
So at this point now, you're probably like, I got a 28-piece band, I got a record company, I got little kids, if someone wants the music, they can have it.
Yeah.
It was Apple/Volkswagen. And I actually have it here. We can play it. But I thought you might share a little bit of the details. Okay, here, I'll play it. Because I thought there was another interesting detail. It's a quick 30-second thing. But here is an ad from, gosh, when is this? 06 or 07? Like,
no, 2003.
Three, okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is basically Volkswagen Beetle created an iPod. And kids, if you don't know what an iPod is, go Google that. But it was like a tray or a holder for your iPod while you're driving. So here is the commercial, and it uses Light and Day by the Polyphonic Spree.
Light and Day is more than you'll say. Just follow the day. Follow the day.
Sun. So there you are. Hopefully we can get sponsored by either Volkswagen and or Apple. But what I understand is you negotiated when they asked you not only, I guess, price point, but also you wanted to have the name of the band and the name of the song show up in the ad, which was brilliant on your
part. Yeah, that was the thing. It's like, if you want to do this, let's make sure we see our name in that. That would be really cool. And they were like I think they loved it. And then they started doing that quite a bit. But
yeah. And it was the first time that ever had happened, right? Is Polyphonic Spree.
I was, you were saying about how it was in that climate. You had Kurt Cobain talking about doing ads and corporate sellouts and stuff. Yeah, just come from the 90s of having that kind of mentality. And you're right. You know, I'm maturing a little bit more. I've got kids. I've got this band that is like financially exhausting to get anywhere. And I had to justify. I thought, you know what? I drive a Volkswagen. We had a Eurovan at the time. I drive a Eurovan. We use Apple products. They're going to play the music. I'm not getting any radio airplay because the Spree is so left of center anyway.
Sure.
And the only way you can hear it would have been through that. I'm like, let's do it. And so I just justified it.
Sure.
And it's so weird because I had some friends and bands that came up to me after that happened, like, how did I feel about doing that? And I told them exactly what I just told you guys. And so it's like,
I felt great cashing that check.
Yeah, I felt great about it. But it's like, it's a means to an end, you know?
Right.
The band has got to get heard. They're not playing it on the radio. I don't have the money to tour this band.
And I'm sure venues are probably going, I'm sorry, what? How many people did you just say?
Yeah,
you have enough microphones.
It was difficult to get gigs, you know? Yeah. And so, the irony is, it's like right after that happened, and these were bands that I respected and all, and, you know, and they were like, after the conversation kind of came around, it's like they could see how they could maybe do that.
Sure.
And it's like, it just started happening. Other bands started doing it and it became like this thing. Mm-hmm, and then we did Scrubs. That was another.
It's funny.
Deal.
I have that queued up now next.
You know, it's like, it's the same kind of deal. It's like, now you're doing these television shows and, you know, it's just, I don't know. The world started to change at that time.
Totally.
I think the way you promoted things definitely started to change. I mean, it just wasn't the radio wasn't the only thing, or MTV wasn't the only thing. The internet actually became this thing. And I know that we're talking about ads and a television show, but it was this whole idea that you had to reach beyond what was seen as the traditional.
Yeah.
Even though you had just opened a record store, you had to reach beyond the traditional at that point in time. And, you know, your band wasn't traditional in the sense that it's 28 people in robes.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So I actually have the clip from Scrubs here because a couple of reasons. One, I want to keep playing the music. It happens to be the same song, but still, it's not just the song being used in the episode. You were all cast in the episode. One of the band members was like either not feeling well or whatever, and they said, well, you have to perform to keep him happy or something like that.
Yeah.
And so you get to get – I wanted to play it because also it could give people a feel for that festival party atmosphere of what a Polyphonic Spree experience is like. So here's a little clip from Scrubs that you get to see and feel this whole experience.
Or whether it's a personal choice.
Hey, you want to go for a beer after the show?
Light and day.
And there's the robes.
More than you'll say, cause I'll not
in the end, it's about integrity.
I really like this run sequence. It's really great. Just follow the day. Follow the day.
Oh! Yeah!
No!
Oh. And then we get back to the. Scrubs featuring the entire Polyphonic Spree.
What a trip.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. That guy that's in that's playing the sick choir member, that's Josh David Jordan. He's a filmmaker, and he just completed another film. I was in his first one, This World Won't Break, and he's making another one that's going to come out. We're going to start going to festivals here in the spring. But
that's awesome.
El Tanto por Cristo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For Christ. But
you
yeah.
You play Gabriel, right?
I play Gabriel, the angel. You've done your homework. Appreciate that. but Josh's wife, Jessica, was singing in the choir. Josh was an actor. And they said, do you have any actors in the band? I said, yeah, Josh is an actor. I know his wife's in the band. And so we got him to be the sick choir member.
That's so cool.
What a way to get casted.
Yeah.
Well, I know a guy.
Really. Yeah, he got his SAG card because of that.
There you go.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
Look, real quick, right around this time is when, so probably right before these commercials came out, I had heard Tripping Daisy sort of tangentially. I wasn't in it the way that Phil was, but my friend Mike comes to me when In the Beginning comes out and hands me the disc and goes, this is Dave music. If ever music was written for you, this is it. Cause I'm a huge Flaming Lips and Yes fan. And he goes, here you go.
Oh, wow.
This band was created for you. And it was just so funny. Cause it was just, he was like, we sat down together and we listened to it and it was in the same way, but it was that same introduction where you had that organic moment where it was like, this thing is aligning. And it was just one of those moments. It makes me very, very happy to remind myself of that. He reminds me of this. My friend Mike, I still talk to all the time. He literally would remind me that on occasion. So it's one of those things that I just love to think about, those sort of snap moments where those things come into your hand.
Sure.
Literally, yeah. In this case.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was a huge Yes fan. I digested the whole Yes catalog at 14 years old.
Mm.
It was a big influential band to me.
That's so cool. And like you had said, like these influences that are just pervasive in your music, like it's just there whether you meant it to be or not. It's just kind of like it's kind of baked into your creative process. But
I think the prog side in general, because I like how, you know, songs like, well, it's talking about Moody Blues and Yes, how they take these journeys with their songs.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And go places. And that just appealed to me. This record's a total journey, Salvage Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of it's just the way that it unfolded, but it has everything to do with, you know, what's been influenced through the years of younger age.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. That song, was also used in, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yeah.
That would be another place where people might have heard it or remembered it. And then a couple other just, you know, factoids, little nugs here. David Bowie helped kind of launch things for you. You performed a couple of festivals with him, or his stuff that he invited you to perform at for like a week or something like that.
Well, he invited us. This was after we played the South by Southwest for the first time. It was 2 weeks later after we played that, and we got a call that he wanted us to come play London at the Royal Festival Hall for a festival he was curating. And a lot of people had never been out of the state, much less even flown an airplane or go to Europe.
Well, I think if you get 20 some people together, you're going to have at least a contingent that's never been to Europe.
Yeah, it was a trip. But he brought us over there and we played. And
that's awesome.
It was kind of a monumental trip for us because the UK went nuts for the Spree. We ended up spending probably the next 4 years of our time over there.
Mm-hmm.
Quite literally, we lived in a hotel called the Hotel Columbia, and my kids had a toy room there. It was nuts, and it was all because of that show we played for him. Wow. And then we played another festival, and then he took us on tour for 2 months with this last tour, the reality tour.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm singing a duet with him on a nightly basis. Oh. It's freaking crazy.
Oh my gosh. How unnerving has that got to be the first time you show up and it's like, okay, I just want to do one song with you.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, the way he brings it up to me, you know, he goes, Tim, I want to talk to you. I'm like, okay. It's like, I've got this idea, this song I want you to sing with me on. I'm like, cool. He goes, I kind of have it all figured out. You know, I'm going to have you kind of enter the catwalk up there on the top, and you're going to walk down while you're singing. You're going to meet me up front, and we'll kind of get close together, and I'm going to finish the song out on this stylophone. Like, he had it all figured out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was Slip Away. It was the name of the song. It's weird because it kind of reminds me of songs off Hunky Dory at the time. Mm-hmm. It just went really well. He, our band and him, we just kind of clicked, man.
Sure.
It was a really good experience. He was very approachable, in our orbit. He would come out and watch the shows. He'd wear a wig so he could get out front and wear a ball cap and just kind of roam around and watch us play.
Oh, that's so fun.
Every time he'd come up on the side of the stage and our sound checks, he was just so like into our band. And anytime he did anything, he was curating, he always called us up. And he tried to extend the tour because it was just going so well. But
right.
he had another band. But anyway, he just flippantly mentions, goes, you know, I want to do a song with you. You know, I figured that we could record a song together because something that I did with Freddie, you know, he and I did a song. And he's just saying it like that. I'm just standing there going, what?
Yeah. Well, as you were even telling the story, I was like, well, he did that thing with Bing Crosby, the Peace on Earth and Little Drummer Boy. I was like, I could see him also being like, yeah, me and Bing did this thing.
Yeah. But it was, oh my God, what can I say?
Exactly.
So
that is awesome.
To be a part of that experience was amazing.
Also a little cool tidbit, Annie Clark, who is now St. Vincent, used to be in the Spree.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very cool.
Yeah, she was, Annie was wet behind the ears at that time. She wasn't even playing through effects at that time.
Wow.
And, she had to get effects in order to play with us. And, I like, got to get a pedal board together, got to learn how to play through these effects. She was already a great guitar player on an acoustic guitar and a regular electric guitar. But Annie's a quick learner, quick study, and she nailed it. She's a ferocious guitar player.
Oh, my God. I love her music.
Like, ferocious.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually, a lot of times Rolling Stone or somebody will come out, you know, with top guitarists of all time or whatever, and one of the there's a handful of people I will go check and see, you know, where they are to see if I can even lend credibility to the list. She's one of the people I want to make sure is rather high on the list.
Yeah. She's amazing.
Yeah. But I want to get to some promotions in addition to the new record. I wanted to kind of talk about some of the shows you've got coming up, in particular, the Holiday Extravaganza. Before we get to that though, you have one Holiday Dream Volume 1 out there, right?
Is it time for another one?
I think so. I mean, if you called it Volume 1, you're basically kind of
building
a lily
there
for at least Volume 2.
I'm the worst. I kind of drag my feet a lot, so I kind of put myself in a situation where I have to do something. So I did the Volume 1 for that exact reason. Like, so I have to do Volume 2. And it's on there. We're going to end up doing that pretty soon.
Awesome. Yeah. What I love,
you just take that Elvis one that's such a bestseller and just basically duplicate that and hope for like a tenth of the sales. I mean, that sounds like a really good idea.
Or, you know, do the Bing Crosby, David Bowie song over again.
Fine. Yeah. I'm just the worst though, because I take those classics and completely change them.
See, I was just about to talk about that though.
Yeah.
Like, Christmas music is something that so many people know, obviously.
Right.
And back to what you talked about before, you love melody. You love to take these songs and somewhat kind of deconstruct them and reconstruct them. So whether it's Do You Hear What I Hear or Silver Bells, I'm like ready to like sing along or at least anticipate where it's going because of what I know. And you do it in some other completely total way, different way.
Yeah,
and I love it. I think it's amazing.
Well, I appreciate you loving it. It's not really, I wouldn't say it's advantageous if you're trying to reach a large amount of people when you do stuff like that.
Well, like, I can tell you that all the Spree fans I know, I can't wait for Volume 2. So
right. Well, I know that they're ready for it. And we'll do something. And I can't help but go there. It's like I feel like, you know, we did this mix of Peter Gabriel. They asked us to do a remix of a Peter Gabriel song for a song called This Is It. This was years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And got the tracks, and it's like, I just gotta you know what? We're going to take everything out. No music. Just use his voice. And I'm going to rewrite a song to that voice. And so you go and you hear it. And it's with the banjo and all this other kind of stuff. It has nothing to do with his song. And it's just like, you know, it's great for me because I like to explore that kind of stuff. Sure. And like, it's just so much more fun creatively to be able to do stuff like that. Oftentimes, I don't think it's like smart, you know, marketing to do things like that. But there's a few people out there that would appreciate it. I know I appreciate it.
Yep.
I love doing it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I guess that's all that matters. You know, at the end of the day.
Yes. Listen, if you're pure to, you know, true to yourself and you create what is, you know, speaking to you, there's going to be people who want that. You know?
Yeah. So
absolutely.
Yeah, I shoot myself in the foot. I always have for many years.
And yet the universe has been good to you. So
yeah, it has.
But on the holiday stuff here, so you have the extravaganza. I'm going to bring up the site so that we can kind of reference some things for people. So this is the Polyphonic Spree website, thepolyphonicspree.com. And let's go into the tour. So here we have the Majestic Theater shows. So here, Dallas, Texas, Majestic Theater, it's December 15th and 16th. If you're in Dallas, anywhere nearby, or want to hop on a flight to go see one of the coolest, craziest, and isn't it, is it two shows a day? Is it like a kid-friendly one and then a spree show at night?
No, that's the way it is in general. We'll have like a family during the, say during the day, it starts at 6 o'clock.
Oh, right, right, right.
But it's kind of a family environment, and then we'll do a rock show afterwards.
Right.
At the end. But these are two shows. This is the first year we've done two shows back to back. Usually we just do one show, but they keep selling out. So we said we'll add another show.
Yeah, of course they sell out.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't want to go? So yeah, and you can get some merch there. We always love trying to sling the merch.
20 years of doing that thing.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it started off as like my kids were little and I thought, you know, this is something where people that have kids that want to be able to take their kids to a show that their kids can enjoy and the parents can enjoy. And I'm kind of like, I did that for my peers and friends and family and stuff.
Yep.
And it's like, now my kids are older now and they're not around and I'm stuck doing this thing because it's just such a tradition for our city. Yeah. And it's like, I'm 20 years into this thing. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's, I don't see it ever ending.
No, I wish I could get to Dallas. So that same kind of thing, like I loved a holiday concert early in December that just kind of got me into the spirit and, you know, could spend 2 weeks trending towards Christmas. And so I was like, well, heck, I'm going to just do my own show. So like we created this Winter Wonder Jam and this will be our third annual. So, you know, we got 17 years to catch up to you, but, the other part about it was I was kind of exhausted with all of the old versions of things. So I just had then had the idea of, let me reach out to the people who have been on the show and see if they want to send us a new recording of something. So some people send us a recording, some people send us something that's already out there. Like we're going to use Silver Bells of yours. Everyone can kind of tune in for that one. Or some people have original holiday music that they're like, oh, would you be okay with this? And I'm like, I would love that. So it's a nice mix of all these different kind of sounds on that day because it's, if nothing else, totally new, different versions you've never heard before.
There you go.
And some original stuff as well. So thank you so much for letting us use one of the Spree's Holiday Dream tracks.
My pleasure.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on the show. This was such an honor. If you don't mind, would you maybe just say hi to all my college buddies? It's Eric and Russ and Blunt and Bailey and everyone at 16 Second Street. They would get such a kick.
Eric out. And Russ and Blunt and Gary?
Bailey.
Bailey. Oh, yeah. Bailey. Yeah. Beetle Bailey. Awesome. Hey, guys. Remember me back in the day, Tripping Daisy? My decision, your decision. We are the Brown Eyed Pickle Boys.
Yeah, actually, that was, I think, one of the names of our, like, intramural teams or something, whatever. Like, we were like that, and no one got it except us. But, again, right. We did it for us, not for anybody else.
There you go.
This was such an honor. Thank you so much, Tim. And, you know, have a great holiday extravaganza. And
yeah, thank you.
Good luck with the record. I really hope that you get like a East Coast, Northeast tour when you guys start maybe hitting the road. Or if you want to bring, you know, just simply the listening experience up this way, we can definitely arrange for something to happen here in Bethlehem with that.
Yeah, something's going to happen. I'm definitely going to do the listening experiences. And we're working on, we've got an agent right now that's working on trying to put some tours together for us to do. It's just financing this thing has become so tough. And these days it's gotten so expensive. And so it's just, it is what it is, but I'm not going to give up. I can make it happen. I'll figure it out. So
absolutely. But, well, yeah. Anything within striking distance of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, I'll definitely be there.
Awesome. Well, and that's by Philadelphia, right?
Correct. Yeah. We're about an hour north of Philly.
All right, cool.
Yeah. Anyway, Tim, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Absolutely. David.
Philip.
How awesome.
That was fantastic.
And I was a good boy. I didn't get into all the tripping Dixie stuff.
I appreciate the fact that you put on your guardrails.
I showed a lot of restraint. There was so much I wanted to get into.
Maybe that's a separate episode where you discuss ahead of time that that's the plan.
Yes, exactly. That would probably be it. But wow. I mean, just what a great, great story.
Well, there's so many good things to talk about. And I know, and I'm not trying to, but truly the new album is, the Salvage Enterprise is an excellent listen.
Excellent.
Like, and it really is a front to back listen.
Yes, for sure.
So it's really great to see something from an artist that you've, you know, you like and you've been paying attention to that comes out with something and it catches your ear all over again in a whole new way. And that's one of the things that I love about what we get to do with this is we talk to people and you hear those things. And then we get, as we say in the beginning, you get the story behind it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
All new things now to go listen for.
Absolutely. And we learned that David Bowie is even probably more awesome than we even realized.
I'm pretty much sure he is awesome incarnate or was. Let's properly phrase that.
Yeah, absolutely. And we also learned do not use the Disneyland Records trademarked logo.
Oh, legal will call them. They're pissed.
All right, Phil, let's say goodbye to everybody.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Your Next Favorite Band. We'd like to sincerely thank Tim DeLauder of the Polyphonic Spree for sharing amazing stories, terrific music, you know, even the inspirations, the inspiring story of you know, him coming through, you know, a dark time with this music. And that's just such a great, you know, thing to hear. And you know, his vulnerability there was super appreciated. Also, there'll be links in the show notes to the band's website, to the Spotify and YouTube channels, and any of the links to the different things we chatted about today. And definitely get your ears on this new Salvage Enterprise record and listen to it from track one through. As always, our goal here is to bring you your next favorite band. If you tuned in today because you already knew Tim or the Polyphonic Spree or Tripping Daisy or all of the above, thank you so much. We just hope that you liked what you heard and saw, and you might like and subscribe and follow us, and we will bring you your next favorite band in a future week. Or you can check out our website, nextfaveband.com. All of our interviews are there, both the video and the audio versions of them, so you might be able to find your next favorite band is already out there. We have a tremendous event coming up this coming Sunday, December 10th, 3 o'clock is the Winter Wonder Jam, and then we've got some really cool episodes after that we'll talk about then, but really hope you can tune in for that. Hope to see you at a live Wonder Jam soon. Did you like that, David? That was good. Stay tuned here. We're going to play Shadows on the Hillside, which is another track off of Salvage Enterprise, the Polyphonic Spree. Thank you once again, Tim, and enjoy one last track here off of the new record, Shadows on the Hillside.
Blast all those demons, vitamins, carry me, please, please, please. While my heart silently screams. Fade all those past lives, think yourself a renegade, just leave. Cause thoughts only flow when the windows are wide. Save all the sadness, take yourself out to sea, please, please. While the stars politely release. You gave up the last time, try your best to pry away, just be. Cause thoughts only flow when the windows are wide. Reach out and fall far away. Finally wish you can fly and dream. Shadows on the hillside. What you found were the wings to go. You just set yourself free. Shadows on the hillside. What you see is miles high. What you have is what you need. What you need. What you need. What you need.